Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by Johnstone Fine Foods. Buy premium Irish dry-aged beef at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
Welcome to another episode of Dishing It Out with me, Gary O'Hanlon.
And me, Gareth Mullins.
And coming up on today's show, we will have our usual culinary conundrums. We'll be shooting the crack about where we've been in the world of food over the last week. And the mighty Dave Muir of the Dave Muir Show on Today FM. Good pal, fellow suffering Man United fan. And
yes,
he will be joining us sore from this week's
result. Or maybe
result.
Not. He's a delusional blade Man United fan, that
look. Yeah, I tell you what, but I guarantee you, right? I guarantee you he shows up here head to toe in United gear.
Of course he will. I've never seen him.
He dresses like my 8-year-old Ollie. Ollie doesn't leave the house unless he's wearing a kit. Dave is the same. He's a fully fledged grown man. Loves his gear. Loves his gear. Don't go anywhere.
So you were cooking on stage this week, are we? You were down in the Taste of Sligo, or
yeah, it's Taste of Kildare first.
Oh,
actually,
yeah. Well, you did both of them,
yeah, back to back days, yeah. Sarah, well, Taste of Kildare was at Nice Racecourse, great festival.
Yeah, I was away.
Yeah, you'd mentioned to me you were maybe going to do
it. Yeah, was
right?
It? Because that was their first run.
No, they've done it before, but I think it was actually at the K Club before. Like, I know we were one of the headline sponsors this year, but it was, the location was Nice Racecourse. There was a big gala dinner, the Harvest Dinner, they called it, on Friday night. That was pretty cool.
You know
that? Paul went, and the owners of the K Club went, and then Paul was there representing us, and John from the sales and marketing division. But I was in the hotel, and then Saturday I did a demo. Rachel was on around lunchtime. I was on right after Rachel Allen, and it was brilliant actually. Yeah, the cooking demo was in a lovely area. It was packed. I worked, there's this guy I've been buying, Nolan's of Kilcullen. I've been buying lamb off them since I went to Kildare in the K Club. It's amazing gear. So I did a wee dish from then, and then McCarthy's.
What did you do?
I did a little lamb rack lollipop with a celery rack remoulade, a little sherry vinegar caper jus, and then a little petit pois to finish it.
Did you show them how to clean the rack?
Taught them how to clean the rack, yeah, and then split it, cooked them a la minute just, and rested them, and then with a little sherry vinegar caper jus, and showed them a little fancy pantsy remoulade, just a posh coleslaw, really.
Yeah.
But a lovely accompaniment to lamb, you know. And that lamb that I've been using, I did it for the dinner that, do you remember last week or the week before,
all
we talked about
saw,
the Michelin star guys from Switzerland. I did a dish with Nolan's of Kilcullen's lamb that night too. It's just gorgeous gear, you know. And then there's a big strawberry farm right outside one of the side entrances, the entrance to South. It's a private entrance, really. It's not always open to the public, but that shows you how close to the K Club McCarthy Strawberries are. So they have a lovely wee area, and there you go in. There's an honesty box. You stick in a fiver and you take a big tub of strawberries out of the fridge, and they're amazing, you know. So I did a lovely little summery eating mess with.
They must be coming to the end.
Probably coming to the end. But you know yourself now, they can force grow stuff all the time. But obviously the natural season for strawberries is coming to an end. So it was nice to use the likes of that. And then Sunday was a day off, but as you know, you're always kind of pushing the business, you know. So it was down to Taste of Sligo. Anthony Gray from Ile Ban was on the committee down there. That was their first ever food festival. So Frankie from Portmore and Westport, Sham from The Cottage and my kitchen.
I seen Kevin down there.
And Kevin Dundon was there. So we were all cooking on Sunday. It was me, Sham, Frankie and Kevin.
Jesus, that sounds like a recipe for a few points.
Yeah,
we
had a wee bit of a shindig afterwards. Yeah, and a good friend of mine, Parry Canley from college. He doesn't cook anymore, but he came to meet me. It was good to see him. So Taste of Sligo was amazing as well. They had people there from, you know, there's oyster farmers over there. There was people with mussels, ice cream, sorbets. Loads of restaurants had stalls. There was Queen Maeve Square. It's like a new area that's been regenerated. Loads of my old... I would have got a lot of customers in Viewmount House from Sligo and that neck of the woods, because obviously Sligo, Dublin, you're going through Longford. So now I'm just redirecting them all to the K Club, you know what I mean? And lots of them have been coming down to the K Club, which is lovely. That was a for a year one of a food festival... Like, they were up at about 4,000 or 5,000 people a day. Wow. It was awesome. Yeah, it was cool. Really, really good. Stayed in the Glasshouse, got a gorgeous room in the Glasshouse. And the head chef, sorry, Alan from the Glasshouse, who is an amazing chocolatier. He is phenomenal when it comes to chocolate work and patisserie. So he was on before me on Sunday as well, and got to chat to him for a while. So yeah, really cool food vibe down there. And you know, Taste of Donegal hasn't been on this since COVID hit. October 13th now, the weekend of the 12th and 13th. Used to be like the little Christmas one, but there's a smaller version of Taste of Donegal. So I'll be cooking on Sunday the 13th.
Flat out.
Up there. Yeah, I haven't been going anywhere or doing much. I mean, bar TV here and there in the podcast. So I think it's been I feel like I was never off the road before COVID, and it seems that it's only now starting to come back, and crowds are starting to come back in, and people aren't nervous about planning it and getting it going, you know. But these food festivals they're the backbone of local communities, and you know, small producers get to show their wares at them, you know. So when anybody sees them going on or sees them happening, like Donegal Rapeseed Oil had a lovely stall at Taste of Sligo that was right outside the marquee, the demo marquee. So yeah, it was good. Now, you were hopping around Champagne. You're just that wee bit fancier than me last week. But did you do a bit of the real job this week, or were you on the go?
No, I was just right back into it. Our lives, as you know, are very much starting to get ready for Christmas. And
I saw some of your wee videos from the Super Value collaboration. It was beautiful.
Yeah, doing a few
really nicely done.
Yeah, doing a few bits and pieces with them about their, you know, when choosing wine, you know.
Pairing.
Doing some pairing in alongside. And then, obviously this week is the final of the Young Chef competition. So my life is getting engulfed by Eurotalk at the moment. So getting all the chefs in situ for who's cooking on Sunday.
Intercon Sunday night.
Yeah, and you know what? There's a few tickets left of this, which is surprising. So this is out on Wednesday. If you did want to go and experience to eat some Michelin star food in a banquet situation, we've got Graham Neville is doing the canapes.
Sunil's cooking.
Sunil's doing the starter. We've got Dede is doing the fish course. We've got I'm trying to think who's doing the main course now, just have a brain freeze. And then we've got Sean doing dessert. Come back to me now in a sec who's doing the main. So if you wanted to go and watch the country's best culinary talent and eat a Michelin star meal, and we'll announce the winner. We've got
Shauna Murphy, last year's winner. Shauna's doing the dessert.
Keelan Hicks is
Keelan from Variety Jones.
Exactly, he's cooking the main course. So, like, I know last year we had a few people in the room that weren't industry, but you just go on to Eurotalk's website and you can buy a ticket and come and eat a Michelin star meal with paired wines.
Eurotalks.ie, Eurotalks.ie, and it's the Young Chef of the Year gala dinner.
So what will happen is on Sunday morning, as I don't know, you know this, but the seven finalists will go out to Black Rock and they'll cook and they'll be judged by myself and five other judges, and then that night we'll announce the winner. So very exciting. It's like a year's
standard work. Must be, I mean, it's always high, but you just couldn't get the six. You couldn't split yourself
on year, one. Gary, like, it's going up and up and up and up, and we keep thinking we've hit the ceiling, but then you know, food is, and I think Instagram and all and has really opened a lot of kitchen doors, and we've spoken about it a good few times. And what I love most about the competition is that even though they're in a final competing against one another, the camaraderie that I see between the six or seven finalists, and you know, Sean is cooking.
It's the best of our industry. Best showcase of our industry.
But they all talk about the previous, like Shauna talks that she's still such good friends with people that she competed against.
And Brona, got to the final of the year, one of my last years in Viewmount House. She was my sous chef and made friends for life that time, you know. But I tell you, big hat tip to you on that one, Gareth, because I know, like, you were Commissioner General for a long time, but you really, as well as putting the organisation on a great financial footing from being in trouble to actually bringing the Young Chef really to the fore, it's created like an unbelievable buzz year. I mean, it's the biggest event now on the culinary calendar in Ireland, bar none, I'd say.
We just done the food awards as well, and I think that the stuff that the lads on the food council are doing, I mean, you sat there for many years. And, you know, I stay in kind of around the young chef. I'm kind of head of the young chef now, so I keep that end of it. But Connor and Aisling and all the guys.
Connor does it good in Aisling.
He really does. Yeah. They all do. I mean, so many people put so much.
But you can tell the heart's in the right place, and it really does. I mean, like, there's so many chefs, and I know I did it myself for many years as well. Like, but, you know, you got to have your heart in the right place. And I see with the Eurotux Food Awards there, God, I remember I've been buying Colatin Cheddar, man, for a long, long time.
And did you find it there?
And it was, he got that award, and Richie's. I mean, it's if you've never had Colatin Cheddar, you're not living. It's but it's not for the faint-hearted, man.
No, it's
heavy duty stuff.
Delicious.
Yeah, it's the best of gear. All right, so that's all the trials and tribulations of us two. We're gonna go.
Let's talk, man. You know,
Let's go find our boy Dave and see what he's up to. Okay, so we finally, this guest, we've been trying to get him in here for the longest time possible. And of course, we would have to get him in the morning after the worst Man United performance of all time. But hopefully he'll get me back smiling. Dave Moore, and I usually say, as I said to my wife today, goes Dave of Dermot and Dave, yeah. Dave, that Dave. I don't know, have you been able to wash that off yet?
At this point, yeah, but a lot of people do still refer to me as And Dave.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was my full title, And Dave. But no, now I'm just Dave Moore. Yeah.
And Shard, wee Ollie last night, one of my wee boys, whatever, and Annette says, you got Dave to thank for having clean legs.
You get that more than, shouted at me more than anything.
It's unbelievable.
Wash me legs in the shower, you filthy animal.
Yeah, you're the one. And what was it? I'm trying to think back to that whole thing. Actually, it happened. You're just like going, you've never washed your legs. Is that what it was?
It just came up in conversation that, like, you know, somebody talked about scrubbing their legs, and I was like, whoa.
Who does that?
I was like, why are you doing that? I was like, because if you're playing five,
I'm really full. Yeah,
you know, and you got filthy knees or whatever, you'd go in and you'd need to get the muck off them, whatever. On a day-to-day basis, I was like, have you heard of gravity? Like, it's hair on hotspots and everything else takes care of itself. And they were like, no. So since then, I've revealed that I've never washed my feet, never washed my legs, never washed my arms.
I'd say 80% of men in the country just went, Jesus, neither have I.
Yeah, well, that's it. But like, so I ask all my guests this question, right? Everybody from, like, yourselves to Russell Crowe, whoever it would be, you know? And I'm telling you, it's 60-40... Let's say that they do, but I don't believe about 20% of them. So I'd say it's actually about, I'd say over half of the population does not wash their legs. Women, sure, exfoliating. I'm sure, like you boys, you know, putting on fake tan.
Yeah. That's mad.
You know, shaving your legs, whatever. But on a day to day basis, no, it's not a thing.
Yeah,
it's not a thing.
I still think we'd be better off starting about the fact that you come in head to toe in Man United gear. I was driving in, going, every time I see him, he has a badge, but like literally every item of clothing you have on you.
I've got like the Stone Roses.
Who was that for?
It doesn't bother your wife that you still dress like a 14-year-old, no?
No. I've long established that is that's part of it. Yeah. As she says, you just look like a giant toddler. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly kind of what I'm going for. She's also a Spurs fan, so based on the result yesterday. You know what kind of atmosphere was? Someone said, oh, did she kick you out to a hotel? I was like, no, she kept me close.
Yeah,
so she could constantly tap me on the shoulder and go, 3-0, baby.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, look, these are the days when you need to wear your Nike.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about it, right? It's all well and good when we have a cracking result like 7-0 against League One Barnsley.
Yeah.
You know, that's all well and good when we can defeat them. You know, then you don't even wear your Nike.
Yeah, we were rampant. That's what I texted Muller that night. Rampant.
Yeah. I'm back.
Well, as I said on my Instagram, we're going to win the league. Asterisk. League One. When we drop into it.
Yeah, it's been tight. It's on our notes from today. Big kudos to Ed Sheff over there in the corner. But I don't know where I was listening to you recently. It was maybe a month or so ago. You must have jumped on a pod, or it was one of your own or whatever, and you started talking about the fact that you were you studied Russian at college, was it? There was loads of different wee bits and bobs that you had said. I was like, Jesus, you think you know somebody?
I wouldn't say fluent. So like I studied it in college. So I did business studies in Russian in Trinity.
Why?
Okay, a number of reasons. One, I wanted to be a rock star. So obviously you study business in Russian. No, so I made a deal with my parents as a good boy when I was in fifth year and I wanted to be a rock star. And I was like, look, this is all I want to do. I want to play guitar. I want to sing. I want to write songs. That's what I'm going to do. They were like, yeah, you're good and all, but let's do it after you get your degree. And I was like, okay, fine. Because I can be in a band and I can practice and I can gig and I can do whatever. I said, if I do well on my degree, get a degree and I do well, will you like fund whatever I want to do next? So I'm thinking like, you know, European tour.
Yeah,
whatever.
Buy you a big bus.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever it takes. You know, one of those ones with the helicopter on it. Yeah. So they said, yeah, deal. Go and do well. So I sat down, did my leaving cert. It was all fine. And right, what do I want to do? It's like, well, if you don't know what you want to do with your life, you study business, right? No offense to anyone who's a business degree like I do, but that's literally, I don't know what I want to do.
Yeah.
So it was business studies. And so there was three options in Trinity. So sorry, I wanted to go to Trinity because all my mates were going there. I could get the Dart in from where I lived. UCD was too far away. DCU, there was no direct bus, whatever. I was like, oh, Trinity's the, I'll go Trinity. I'll do business studies and I could do French, German or Russian. They were the three options. And I spoke French fluently by the time I left school. I did German for my junior cert. It was pretty good. I was like, I'm not going to spend 4 years.
It's good for you because studies are usually muck at languages.
Yeah, no, I don't know what it is. I just have a thing and I can pick them up. Like I'm probably up at, now, not fluent, varying degrees of fluency. I'm probably up around 7 different languages. Like I have a conversation in, do you know?
I have that as well, except it's the opposite of that.
You can't talk in 197 languages.
Just about have English down.
But, yeah.
And I worked in France for 5 years. It's like, what are you on about?
Well, that's it. See, the thing is, so like I was okay at French. Then I went on one of the school exchange things for 3 weeks.
Oh, cool.
Like I came back fluent. Like it was nuts. My teachers were like, what happened to you? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. I just hung out with girls and spoke French.
Spanish now, when I was in the States, because like, every kitchen's in the basement because of space and blah, blah, blah. They give very little space on the main floor to a restaurant. So all the big areas are downstairs. So that means every fridge, every freezer. So when you're on the line, it's called the line. Same guys would have known this from Australian days. But when you need something, and there's generally one or two really highly paid chefs, and then there's like line cooks or whatever. But you can't leave that line. Like if you're conducting, like leaving the line for even 2 minutes, just like chaos in a busy place. And the Hispanic boys they live in Hispanic communities. They have zero interest in learning English.
Yeah.
They don't try. So you're going up and down those stairs unless you learn to shout for gear in Spanish fairly late. You know, necesita leche por favor,
get it
fucking quick for me. Do you know what I mean? And you'd be spitting Spanish. Like, I mean, you'd walk outside the door then to try and have a conversation. I wouldn't know what they were saying to me.
Sure.
But in the kitchen, from the start of service to the end of it, over for the 5 or 6 years I worked there, anything I needed, I could communicate fast in Spanish. It was mad.
The Russian, I mean, I can't see where you'd...
Yeah, so it was literally, I said, well, if I speak French and I've got decent German, there's no point in spending 4 years studying one of those languages. So the only option I had, and it was the only thing I put in my CAO form, it was a bit of a risky move if you think about it, but I just got in, I think on 5 points or something.
Right.
Anyway, business in Russian, got in, happy day. So
got stuck into it then.
Got stuck in, did the 2 years in Trinity, and then my third year was spent in Russia.
Oh, really?
So this would have been mid-90s. So I went over kind of September, August 95. And the wall had come down in 91. Yeah. Like this was cowboy territory. Like this was
volatile.
Like, yeah, the whole country was up for grabs, effectively. There were lads, like remember Roman Abramovich? I mean, Roman Abramovich was given gas.
Yes.
Like, so the lads just went, Boris Yeltsin just went, you're a good friend of mine. You've helped me. You can have gas. And he became a trillionaire overnight, and you can have electricity.
That's exactly how all them big oligarchs got their beans. Yeah. It was all like, if you were close to the...
Yeah, mate of mine went over on a school tour for transition year.
Yeah.
Good friend of mine. Like now, when we'd be telling the kids, oh yeah, he went to, Lenny's name is, he went to Russia on his...
You got Leningrad, Lenny and Leningrad.
Yeah, exactly. But now when you think of what's going on there, like,
but even then,
for you, I'm surprised
like,
honestly, you went there to live for a year.
You think about it, like you think Trinity College, you know, it's this prestigious university, you know, known around the world. And the relationship they would have with Strasbourg University or Geneva or, you know, Berlin or whatever. So they'd send, so my mates were doing business, French business and German. And they were all like, you know, getting these like packs home.
Yeah.
This is where you will live and this is how you're going to conduct your day. And I'm like, what do I get from Russia?
Nothing.
Literally nothing.
Scarf.
Yeah, nada. Like literally nothing, right? So then we fly over and a lad meets us in the airport. in like...
At least there's that.
Well, you say that until you meet him. He's about 6'6", wide and tall, black long leather jacket and a flat cap, and it's just Russian, no English. And like, we've done 2 years. Like, I'm probably junior cert level.
Yeah.
You know, after right. 2 years in Ireland, maybe. Do you know
your
what I mean?
Name.
Well, like, yeah, yeah. And I have this many sisters and you know what I mean? Like, I like to listen to records at night, you know, that kind of stuff. So your man's just like chatting away, and I'm with a girl from Tipperary, and two of us are just going like,
what is he saying?
We just follow him. So we just get into a car, no, anything. And he just drives us to this, like, honestly, the most disgusting apartment block. I'm going to say apartment block. Flat. Block of flats I've ever seen. And I was like, this was here. I was like, this, like, here, like, мы живём здесь. And he's like, no, нет, cracking up. No. Yeah, the number one, basically, he was saying, it was number one. He's like, you live in number two. So I'm like, oh, okay. So the Irish people from Trinity College, I'm plainly going to get the penthouse suite, walk around. Number two is literally 1% better than number one. I was like, what? So I went in and set ourselves up and didn't hear from anybody for like 3 weeks. And then eventually, like, some lad knocked on the door of the apartment, and we opened the door, and he's like, again, just huge enforcer of a man. And like, tomorrow morning, School of Management, St. Petersburg University, 9 o'clock. We're like, okay, sir, like, whatever you say. Like, and we just went, and then when we got there, it was perfect, it was fine, it was brilliant, but it was ropey. Like, I got shot. Now, well, that's a good headline, but I got shot walking down the street in Russia on my second day. So, mid-90s, right? I'm wearing like a grey sweatshirt with a big N for Notre Dame, like, because I'm one of those kids, right? Yeah.
You're still one. Still one of those.
Yeah.
Kids.
Yankee Doodle.
Backwards baseball cap. Still what I wear today. Like, I'm walking the street with the girl, and we're heading to another Irish person's kind of flat, whatever. And I just kind of go like, flinch, go, ah, whatever. And she's like, what's wrong? And I was like, I don't know. Just, I think something stung me. And I pulled up my sweatshirt, and she's like, it's got a welt about the size of like a 2 euro coin. I'm like, no, at the time it was £2 coin, whatever. Yeah. But I'm like, what? And then she's like, and then something hit the ground beside us. And I was like, I think I'm after being shot. She's like, well, it's not a bullet. I was like, but it's something. We just kind of legged it. Like, but literally some lab was just up in his, you know, his balcony going, American. Because obviously I looked, you know, fully looked like I was from Notre Dame over to study in St. Petersburg.
I mean, would you be sending your own kids now, like, over to the on?
When I tell you this, right? The only way to communicate, this is 95, right? So email wasn't really a thing. Like, it was, but like, my ma didn't have email.
Even 95,
So my ma used to send me a fax from, she worked in the airport in Air Inta. She used to send me a fax from Air Inta to a hotel that was a 10-minute walk away.
Yeah. They used to go down and go.
And I would go to the business center of the hotel, and I would go, hello, I need a fax from, and they'd check my name, and it would take ages, and eventually they'd go, oh yeah, here. And it would just be like, your sister fell off her bike, and you're, you know, getting the news, whatever, right? And then I would like handwrite something, hand it back to her, and she would like, and my mom came into work the next day, and she'd get the fax, whatever, right? And then when I wanted to ring home, which I could do every Sunday, you go to a prefab, and I had these like booths in it. You'd walk in, and you'd give the woman a number. And the number would be your ma's, your family home phone number. And it would cost whatever it would cost, right? So I would ring it and I'd hang up. And then my ma would ring back the prefab in St. Petersburg. And then she'd put me, she'd go, David Moore. And I go, yeah. And she'd go, number one, number two, whatever. I'd go in and I'd sit down in this kind of soundproof boot, whatever, and chat away. Now, not that it mattered, but I'm sure every conversation was KGB recorded or whatever. I wasn't saying anything too exciting, but
his sister fell off his bike.
Yeah, exactly. That was a bit the extent of it. But that was the only way to communicate, because it was too expensive for me to ring her, but she would just ring back or whatever. But that was it. It was mad. And
was that like a normal college semester then? You were away.
So full year. So I did, exactly. I did August to December.
But like, was it mental expense to fly? Did you come back home for Christmas and go
back? Yeah, I came home for Christmas. Now, I was lucky as well. My man worked in the airport, so I had cheaper flights. Now, you couldn't fly to Moscow or St. Petersburg, but I could go halfway. So I would get not a free flight, but a very cheap flight, Dublin to Frankfurt.
Yeah.
And then I would pay full fare Frankfurt, St. Petersburg. And coming back, I'd go St. Petersburg, Copenhagen, and then fly Copenhagen back or whatever.
And the obvious question, because it's this podcast, what was the grub like? A lot of borscht?
The grub was ridiculous, because there was five of us living in a one bedroom apartment. So the living
proper
room.
Proper college living.
Like proper college living. But we had lots of
loads of space.
The living room became the girls' bedroom. Three girls and two guys, and myself and the other fella had the bedroom. And the cooking was a hob, one ring hob, connected. There's no joke. So you know, steel. You know that when you have a steel sink and you have the draining board. So you had that on one side, and connected to it in the one steel pressed thing is a hob.
Right.
It's connected to the sink. And we used to like boil pasta and
a lot of pot noodles,
whatever. But crap, that's all we could do. Like, and so food at home was okay. Look, it was pasta. It was fish fingers. You know, you had a pan, you had a pot and a pan. So what are you going to do? And one at a time. So you couldn't cook.
Yeah,
you couldn't cook two things. You had to cook one, wait to finish whatever. And then when you were out, then I have to say the food was amazing when you were out, because then you'd eat proper Russian food.
Right? Yeah.
So like I used to walk every day down to the metro station, about a 15-minute walk. And just as you rounded the corner away from block number two, the worst place ever to live, second worst place ever to live, there was a little, it was like a news agent. You know,
kiosk thing.
You know, in Spain, actually, they do kiosks where they do news agents. Yeah. And they're like, yeah. So imagine a very rudimentary version of that, that basically sold fags, booze, and raisin swirls, raisin, like,
oh yeah,
I was remember in Russian, like, kind of, yeah, I can't even think what it is in English, but it was basically a raisin pastry. And I get that, and oh my god, it was like so delicious. And then on Fridays, they would have sausages in a soft roll. Again, I had no idea what it was.
Depending on a soft roll, certainly,
but
nice.
Jesus Christ, it was outrageously good. But then, so then they got to know Russian people, and you go to their houses and they feed you like a king.
Oh, but that's amazing. Like,
yeah, how amazing. Nice.
Yeah.
Experience.
It brings some resilience to you though, doesn't it? Like you don't
doing
really,
like
you
that.
Don't
at
really,
the time you don't realize. But,
you don't realize it, no. Like, I mean, some of the dark spots I find myself in over the years too. Like, and then, you know, as years go on, you get into your career and you think life gets easier, but the more responsibility that comes on, the harder it is. But you dig deep into them wee moments. Jeez, I remember waking up in the Bronx as well. My wallet just sitting on my chest. I had no credit card, no whatever. I remember I didn't have a dallion. Like, I think I had like $300-$400 when I fell asleep this one night. Just I was waiting on a bus and went to sleep, and I woke up and the wallet had been emptied. And I had a ticket home to Ireland. This was 2000. I remember Jerry Lynch, a great friend of mine, Gerard Lynch, he gave me $400, and I had to give somebody else $200 of that. I had a place to stay in Boston, and I thought, what'll I do? Will I go home? Mammy dinners, warm house, all of that. And I went, nah, I'm staying. Like, I'm not going home. You know what I mean? But I literally landed in Boston with nowhere to live and $200 that belonged to somebody else.
Yeah.
And left it 6 years later, like, having opened four or five restaurants. And,
yeah,
you know, like, you rock on. Like,
those
if you
trips,
want.
Yeah, those scenarios make you who you are. You know, whatever it is. Like, yeah. That was, like, I loved every second of that.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by John Stone Beef. Explore delicious recipes and discover their premium selection on johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us. Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by John Stone Beef, a tradition of Irish dry-aged beef built on 60 years of passion. Learn more at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.
And have you ever needed the Russian since, Dave? Or have you,
do you know what,
tried to use it or need it?
It's really weird, right? Like, so if I don't speak, you know, say I speak Czech, right? If I don't speak Czech for ages, which you kind of don't in Ireland, I'm so bad. Like, it's such a hard language.
Oh, how do you go on, Dave?
I know. Yeah. When I get presented, I'm so embarrassed. I'm like, oh, Jesus, I should be able to speak some of this, but I can't. But funny, I think because I spent a year there, and I spent a year there in, it's...
You can step away.
It's there. Like, it's 30, what is it? Yeah, it's literally 30 years almost since I went. And I can have, obviously not exactly the same level of fluency, but I'm 85-90% there within a couple of minutes. And the odd time I do run into somebody who is from Russia or Ukraine or Lithuania or Latvia or Estonia of a certain age, when they had two languages, lots of those countries, and they still do. And oh my God, it's like, it's the dream. Like,
yeah.
If they'll humor me, like I did it recently. I coached a couple of football teams and I was coaching the girls under 10s at the time. And a fella messaged me and from the opposition team, he's like, you know, we're going to come over to you this time, whatever. And I could see by his name, it ended in AS. And I was like, I wonder, is he from Latvia or whatever? So anyway, got chatting away to him and he had a very strong accent and he had a friend with him who had less English. He'd been here for 5 years. You might have been here for about 6 months and two daughters were on the team, whatever. So anyway, got my girls out of the change room and I was walking out with them and they were walking out to the pitch. And so I was kind of catching up with them and I heard the two boys chatting in Russian. So as I walked past with the gear bag, you know, I just chimed in Russian and the two of them were like...
Shell-shocked. That's
like, they literally had... You might have been here 5 years, you'd never met a single Irish person who could speak Russian.
No way.
And I spent the whole... Like, we didn't even coach the game. We just let the girls play and the three of us just stood around chatting. But
yeah, it's really amazing. Cool to watch. Misha, one of my closest buddies, we played ball together in Boston for years and then ended up living together and became good friends. But he was born in Kiev and moved over at 8. And he works in the professional, like the financial end of football now at Premier League level, whatever. But when the World Cup was in Russia, I mean, like he's done deals like Eintracht Frankfurt.
Sure.
He did the deal for their shirt sponsor. Wow. He works with Joshua and a few others in other sports. But because of the language, like, I mean, I remember watching a panel discussion on Sky Sports News and it's Putin. Now, not that you want to be sitting on a panel with him, but look,
but
it was
level.
Putin and a few of the boys. Shevchenko was there, Misha, that's him. All from having Russian as, well, a first language, really. Like, English was his second language. And but it's opened up a world of opportunity for him, you know. And that World Cup in particular cemented him then for the recent tournaments, you know.
I think in any country, speaking the language makes such a difference to people.
Well, it's certainly making the effort to, I think, is the 100%. Other big part.
And that's the thing. Like, that's why, for me with languages, I'm never afraid to try.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mightn't be very good, but I'll get the accent.
But that's a
musical ear. I'll mimic the accent. Now, often I get you in trouble. So, like, I walk into a shop.
You go full Steve McClane.
And give it a full, I'll give it full in, like, sounds like I'm fluent, but I only know, like, seven sentences. And then they'll come back to me going, you sound like the, I'm like, oh, here.
You got me. Yeah.
And where did the, so obviously we said it already, but how, you moved into radio then straight, was the partnership there from the start or were you on
with
your
me
own?
And Dermo?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Like, so
straight out of the blocks, it was the both of you from the start.
So yeah, so it's a very weird story. I'll give you the shortened version of it. Basically, pretty much, not everybody, but pretty much most people who work in radio want to work on radio forever, right? So you did Ian Dempsey, he worked in Pirates. So look, I had no interest.
I think it's the thing about radio. I've said here, I take radio over TV. Once you experience radio, it's the most amazing thing.
Incredible. Yeah. I wouldn't go near TV. Like, you've never seen me do it because I've no interest, you know. But radio is just incredible. But so I'd never thought about it. I never considered it. I was a musician. I was a songwriter. I was a producer. That was my job. I was fulfilling the dream that my parents helped I would walk away from. And I was doing voiceover work on the side. Somebody heard my voiceover reel and went, here, I want to meet you about a project. Didn't tell me what it was. It could have been anything. I thought it's an ad campaign or maybe it's localizing a cartoon or something, because I was doing all these silly voices, whatever. And she put me into a room with this other fella and just went, Dave, this is Dermot, this is Dave.
No way.
Literally went, you two get on, and shut the door and walked out. And I'm looking at him and he's like, we're both kind of the same age and are like mid-20s. Looking
sorry.
Right?
Yeah.
How are you? I was like, and I eventually went, do you know what this is? And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, where are we? He goes, oh, this is 98 FM. I was like, the radio station? He's like, what? Do you work in radio? I was like, no. And he goes, I'm not sure why you're here. I was like, no, neither am I, to be honest with you. I don't know. Anyway, so we got chatting and literally within seconds realized we were best mates.
Right.
But she came back in and went, how'd you get on? We were like, yeah, cool. Yeah. I was like, do you want to tell me what this is now? So she basically was saying that Dermot was going to be offered the breakfast show on 98 to replace the previous show that had been moved on, and would I like to do it with him? And I was like, I don't know, I've never done any radio, why do you think I'd be good at this kind of thing? And she was like, look, we're trying to find someone who doesn't work in radio, trying to find someone who's a bit different, someone who's
new voice,
fresh, new voice, whatever. And I suppose around that time, it was probably, this was 2002, it was probably about the time when radio was starting to move away from the guys who I absolutely loved. But
oh,
like,
Ed.
Yeah. You know, the guy with the voice.
I can't believe you just said that.
But it was looking for something, I suppose, a little bit more authentic. Do you know what I mean? Like, that. And think about it, DJs at that point, had all through the 80s and 90s were gods. Like, Marty Whelan came to town.
Again.
Like,
Ed.
Yeah. Ed Smith rocked up, you know. But it was, there was that kind of feeling. Whereas I think there was a movement in the late 90s and early noughties towards, like, actually maybe a bit more everyman, a bit more like, these people are actually relatable, as opposed to like TV presenters were still like, oh my God, it's Gay Byrne or whatever, you know. Whereas it was like, well, hang on, I'm kind of like you guys. I'm just here pushing buttons and playing songs, So I suppose it kind of suited myself in Dermot at that point, that our style, which would have been very just real and crack and two mates. Yeah.
No, I'm sure it was a very much a 50-50 thing, but I know, like, I've been on with you maybe, I'm going to say maybe 4 or 5 times over all the years, but it always seemed like you were the guy in control. Is that just because you're good with the gadgets, or?
Yeah, so.
Because, you know, you always seem to be.
Yeah,
and that's no slight on Dermot.
Dermot's not here to defend it.
No.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
And I know Dermot.
Absolutely, he'd agree completely.
Yeah, but because he's the guy that was actually the radio person prior to that, and he was going in. Like, but I know my memory from being in the room, like, is you conduct everything, really.
But for the first 6 months, he did that job.
Right.
And I was, I suppose, his foil, his partner or whatever. And the smart people in there and ourselves, we figured it out. We were like, this should work the other way around. He's funny. Not I'm not funny, but he's a actual comedian. He was doing comedy sketches on The Breakfast Show before we started. Him reacting to my lead is far better than me. Oh, well, I've got to say something funny here. I don't know. Like, you know, that's not me. Whereas, like, I am, as you said, I can conduct it. I can organize a show. I can run it. I can multitask. I can do the desk. I can play 16 different things at the same time. And when we started, Ed will remember this, it was mini discs and not computers. So you were recording a caller on a mini disc, editing it by twisting a knob and going, like,
really? Gone,
like, yeah, it would have been, it was effectively one step away from splice and tape.
Really?
But you still have 3 minutes to record the call, edit the call, and hit play on the mini disc. Like, it was bananas. And that wasn't Dermot's strong suit, whereas his strong suit was, I'd be really funny if you just give me a microphone and a piece of paper. That's what we gave him. And I took over running the show. And that is your memory of it. And that's how it runs. But it was absolutely a 50-50 in terms of, sure, I might take over that element of things, but then creatively, he was such a force from that point of view. And he would have pushed me in ways that I would never have gone, and I would have pushed him in certain ways. And look, it was 21 years.
And was it a big shock when he told you, or was that conversation?
Not between me and him, no, because, like, we are literally best friends. So these discussions were going on, you know, for a long time before he made any announcement. I think it shocked a lot of people.
Yeah, well,
it was a shocking announcement.
Yeah, it was. Eh?
But not for me. You know, like, this was, I would say, certainly 5-6 years maybe in the making, in terms of him building a business, trying to get out, trying to see when it made sense, and then eventually going, right. And it was a simple conversation. It was like, I need to do this. And as his best mate, I was like,
do it.
I absolutely know you need to do this, and I will support you every step.
Was there ever a worry that you were only the star when you were together, or did you always have confidence that you would have got to have your own gig?
No, I had confidence in myself, but I didn't have confidence that everybody else would feel the same way. And in fairness to him, the toughest part of the decision wasn't, he knew it was the right time. He knew all those things. He, like, one of the big considerations for him was me.
Yeah, you know, if they weren't going to hold on to you.
We were a package. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, if the only thing you've ever done in radio, which is all I've ever done, is Dermot and Dave, like a duo, a double header. You know, you need the buy-in from the people to say, well, hang on, no, like, this could work as a single entity. But then Dermot was like, well, do we know that? Like, I'm worried this, you know, and I was like, look, you can't make your life decision worrying about me.
Yeah.
You need to do what's right for you. I'll figure out what's right for me, but it can't be part of your concern. So in fairness to him, you know, he did. He knew exactly what he wanted to do. He's done it now. And he's like, I couldn't be happier for him. He's pursuing what he wants to do. He's really happy with it. He's working really hard. It's tough starting a business.
Yeah.
Or growing a business, which I suppose, because he's already started it. But to make that your kind of, you're treating.
He's selling out gigs, though, and he seems to have got off to a good start. Thank God.
So hard, it's working well, and I couldn't be happier for him. You know, he was even in on the show. I know this is a podcast, and it'll come out whenever, but he was in on the show with me today as a guest.
I'd seen it coming up, and then I was in the Poxy Dentist, and I missed it. I was looking forward to hearing him.
Like the dynamic is the same. Like, you know, okay, I have to ask him questions.
Yeah,
we have to talk about his show and talk about his book and talk about his whatever. But ultimately, it's just the two of us messing again. You know what I mean? So, like, that stuff.
And you were in with me a while ago before you were up on the rooftop. And I was going to buy you a beer, and you were like, oh, don't drink. And I remember going, oh, just at the moment. And you were like, no, don't drink. And I remember going,
I know. There's an Irish.
You know, I get annoyed when people, when someone
react the way you react.
Yeah, and it was only just because I was like, really? Because I think, is it being in the restaurant before?
Sure.
And I probably sent out 3 glasses and. Whoever your waitress drank the other one, I didn't know.
Exactly,
I was like, oh, anyway. But
so I've never drank.
I've never drank.
And it was just one of those things where, look, as a kid, you know, make your confirmation, take the pledge, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, really? So, that's where it started?
Well, it just kind of like, look, I mean, 12, that was like, I wasn't as always thinking about drinking then. But I suppose by the time I got to 16, 17, when it was a thing, I was really, really focused on athletics. Like 110 meter hurdles. It was like...
Was your thing?
Yeah, and I was like considering going to the States and pursuing like all that kind of stuff. Look, I was never probably good enough, and a friend of mine went for a different discipline, and listen to him, it was one of the toughest things I think he's ever done. Again, it will stand to him, like we were talking about earlier on, but I was much happier to stay at home than and go to
So was food always being a thing then for you?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely, massively. Like, I've always loved food. I've always...
Are you the cook at home or your wife?
No,
you
cook. Yeah. No.
How many kids?
Four.
Four, wow.
So six of us,
Busy house.
It is a busy house, yeah. It is insanely busy. But cooking, I love it. Like, I love the process of it.
Is it relaxing for you? Because we find a lot of people say, like, you know, especially people like you with very busy lives, they find a little bit of an escapism, I suppose, through the pots and pans.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, I don't know about...
Or is it a creative outlet?
Yeah, I think, do you know what? I love building things, right? So I love DIY. Like, I've built, like, outdoor rooms, like Shomers in my back garden. I've built porches.
Guitars.
I've built guitars. I've built pergs. Like, anything I can build, I will build, right? And I think that's part of comes from the opposite of my work. So my work is very... kind of esoteric.
Flowy.
It's like, did I do a good job? I don't know, I'll do it again tomorrow. You know what I mean? So obviously you get your ratings every now and again, and that kind of gives you an indication that maybe it's gone. But you can only really judge it on how do I feel about this show and the one I'll do tomorrow and whatever.
Gary and I find that very challenging about this.
Yes, I would imagine.
Because we're in a world where it's very...
Instant gratification.
Because we constantly go, I wonder how we're doing that. I'm sure Ed is...
Well, actually... He's coming.
No.
I don't give him.
No, but it's
no, but I get
we
it.
Work in a world that's very measured. And
yes.
There's a lot of things tell you where you are. And I know this goes on in this world as well. But, you know, I'd go, well, look, we're having the cracks there.
Like every plate, every dish has a result.
Of course.
It's either perfect physical. Or it's not.
Exactly. Yeah. It's tangible.
That's the thing. I think that's for me, my work is so intangible.
Yeah.
And when I can do something tangible, it's amazing. I think cooking is a little bit like that. So it's not necessarily like, oh, I zone out. And I stick on like... you know, Dark Angel,
Metallica.
Some serious thrash metal, and the up full volume, and I'm just prepping everything. But it's, I learned, like, not that long, maybe in the last 20 years or so, I suppose, I learned, like, I don't even know you guys know terminology, but I basically learned about layering of flavor and bringing things in, like, in stages, and the reasons for doing that, and the methods of doing that. And I think once that clicked, then I went, seasoning. Oh my God, seasoning. Like, oh my God, that opened my eyes to everything. Because before it was like, burn the meat, pour the sauce, put it on the pasta, done. And it was like, everything was just meh. Yeah. And then one day, as I said,
my wife seasoning changed our marriage.
Honestly, I wouldn't doubt it.
Seriously. Yeah. She just, obviously gone, like the book says a pinch. And I'm going, yeah, but when you eat in my restaurants or when you eat, when we're all out together, you're like, oh, it's not nice. Oh, it's gorgeous to me. I mean, you just apply the same logic to what you're making at home.
Yeah.
Taste it. And I don't care if the recipe says a pinch of this or a pinch of that. A pinch of salt never seasoned anything, ever.
No.
It's a fucking bucket or a handful. I goes, taste it, and then taste it again. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And just apply basic logic to it.
Mm.
Honestly.
It is.
Epiphany stuff.
It is epiphany. No, it is. And I think as a result of that learning, And I approached it, I guess, a little bit like you would approach a DIY project. Like, I had the raw ingredients. So, like, you know.
So you build everything at home, you fix everything at home, and you do the cooking.
Yeah.
His wife.
Putting us to blame,
shame. Putting us to shame, yeah. I mean,
well, that's why she lets me dress like a toddler.
I couldn't wire a plug. I mean, I'm fairly nifty at lots of things, but.
But it's only a case of being brave enough to do it. I always feel that way about it. Like, the same with cooking.
Plus,
like,
you're very clear minded as well. Like, a lot of. You know, you're not having a beer to kind of cloud.
Well, that's true. But I suppose it is that thing of, like, I will attack something and give it everything. Do you know
what about going out for a feed then? With four wee dudes, you probably don't go on tour too often, do you?
No, like, we're not. Yeah, we're not massive.
Drive through with the X7, isn't it?
Oh, I've moved now from BMW.
Really?
I'm a Hyundai ambassador now.
Oh, good man.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice. But no, I would. Yeah, we would go. Look, if we've got the kids with us, it's always a challenge, right? You're going to end up in, you know, a burgery.
Yeah.
I don't even mean McDonald's, but
a
dinery
type of scenario
or whatever, where, look, you know, as I saw a brilliant thing the other day, it was like, I can't wait to have kids and travel the world so that they can eat chicken and chips in 187 different countries. But like that's the reality of it. You know what I mean? Mine are quite adventurous. No, in fairness, they are quite adventurous and they will try things. And, you know, my eldest fella's favorite food in the world is a crab burger. You know, like, he'll do that. And my other fella will just eat, if he could eat his body weight in calamaritos, he will. So they're okay from that point of view. But when you're going out with six of us, it's like, okay, look, let's go to hogs and heifers or wherever and just go in and feed ourselves ribs and blah, blah. But if myself and the missus are going out, we will try different places and we'll try different things. And look, we live in Port Marnock, so Malahide's around the corner.
Yeah.
There's a lot of options there. You know, there's good, like, there's a great Pakistani restaurant there. There's Oliver Dunn has got stuff out there, you know. So you can always kind of find interesting things. And then in town, like, I'd be in here most days, you know, and looking for lunch. And I'm not one of those people who, you know, I don't deviate too much. But what I found is, like, probably 8 or 10 spots that I can just go easy
like
peasy.
You're in a great
wee location here, because I mean, I'm down here every week myself. Like, there's lots of cool little gaffs, like, to, you know, there's so many options, like, even within a kilometer.
And authentic stuff as well. Like, so literally around the corner from us here is a Chinese place. I think it's called something really prescriptive. Like, it might be literally called, like, the bun or something, it's called dumpling. I think it's called
dumplings. Down around the left.
Like
that,
I will go in there if I'm gonna treat myself.
I only saw that gaff last week. Funny, because I came.
What's it do? Bell buns and all that type of hero.
I'll tell you how you know it's good. When you walk in, I'd say 80% of the clientele are Chinese. So and the menu's in Mandarin and it's in English, whatever.
So you probably went off and learned blade Mandarin, did you?
No, I haven't got that up the sleeve just yet.
Come here, tell us about the dad jokes. Did that come on? Is that you on your own, or has that always been there?
No, that's been there. Yeah, so a book coming out. Yeah, don't know when this podcast is coming out, but it's out before Christmas, boys. November 7th, the book comes out. Days bad jokes. Yeah, no. Basically, what happened? Because
they are bad.
They are so bad.
Blatant bad.
So bad. But I have
the best ones are when he's laughing before he starts.
But I have a segment on the show called Dave's World that I did literally, I would say, for until Dermot left. So for 21 years, and it was just. He realized really early on that I'm quite nerdy about stuff, right? So I love a fact. I love languages. I love, you know, the neck diameter of a guitar. I love building whatever. He's like, you're such a nerd. So let's do a thing where you try and tell me something and I will just rip the piss out of you. And that was the dynamic of our whole relationship effectively, but it was kind of microcosmed in this one thing. And so, but I'm doing it 5 days a week. So I'd have facts on the Monday, and then I'd have like an interesting thing about music on a Tuesday and something about whatever. It would go on. And then eventually one day I went, I found a funny joke. So I told like 6 jokes, whatever, and we cracked up, whatever. And it was just, because it was kind of freedom to do whatever. And then people just went, oh my God, here's my joke.
All right.
Keep doing that, but here's my. And then I just got like text, whatever. So I went, oh, geez, there's something in this. So then 3 months later, I did it again. And then the reaction was the same. And I was like, geez, I'll do it next month.
Yeah.
And then it eventually got to the point where it was every week. And now it's twice a week.
It's not a rod for your back, is it? Or do you still?
No, I love it. I love it. And like, I get them everywhere. Like, I'll get lads pulling me over the side of the street.
Right, right, right.
Yeah, Dave, into the head in the van. Yeah, what's up? Yeah, you won't be able to put this note in the radio, but listen, check it. And I'm like, that's no use to me. It's funny, but like,
I get thrown off the radio. But then, like,
But like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and then like every one of my mates and every one of their dads and everyone else, you know, sends.
So you got it all down onto paper.
So what I do is I've logged them, I'd say, for about. For about 7 or 8 years, I've logged every joke that's come into me.
So there's a sequel coming there. Is that what we're saying?
There might be. But no, look, we see how the first one goes, all joking aside. Like, it's one of those things where, look, it makes sense. People love bad jokes. Here's my favorite 300 of them. Do you know what I mean? Knock yourself out kind of thing, you know. So, so that's going to be an exciting thing just to see what the reaction to that is.
Who published that? Who?
Gil Books.
Oh, Gil, good man.
Good lads, yeah. So so that's coming out November 7th.
And come here, to wrap the show up, what we always ask is your death row meal. So, and we've had all sorts. And you can go with a main course or you can go to start a main course dessert.
Do you know what? I would go Italian. And myself and my missus, before kids, we went and we did Venice and Rome. And in Rome, at the point, I was a bit of a foodie, like a bit up my own arse. I said, I'm going to look for...
I love when people admit to that.
Yeah. The most avant-garde Italian restaurants. Yeah, because like really what I wanted was to sit down and eat a pizza by the side of the road. But anyway, we found this place and it was fusion. So it was like, it must have been Indo-Chinese fusion with Italian, right? And I know now like Miller's Pizza will do a curry on a pizza or whatever on Baggot Street. You know, that thing exists, right? But this was like haute cuisine, but it was literally say ravioli, but it would be like a chicken madras or something in it. You know what I mean? And it was just mind blowing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. We've never eaten it before.
No, and it was really well done.
Right, okay.
So I don't know, like, I just, when I think back to memorable meals, that just sticks out.
Right.
Because it was one of those things where it was 7 courses. It wasn't like, again, it was, as I said, it was a bit with me on arse.
No, whatever. Yeah.
But it was, you know, but like, and we went in and they made a fuss of us and whatever. We'd booked it from Ireland, you know, 2 months previous or whatever. And it was just, it was incredible. So I think, I don't know, maybe it's the feeling, you know, the newness of all that rather than the actual meal. But I would love, if I'm going out, right? If I'm going out tomorrow and they're going to shoot me in the head, just give me something new and different. Like, you know, I would love, I'd love to experience that again where I go, like, this is actually making my kind of mind go,
what is this?
Do you know what I mean?
Matters in a ravioli, that is a mad one.
But I hear anyone that I've spoken to that's traveled to Japan, I haven't got there yet, but I believe from a chef's point of view, I actually think I heard Anthony Bourdain talking about it there.
He says it changed his life.
But he was like, any chef that he knows, and he says the reason being is because it's so different to Western foods.
Yeah.
So you're constantly just going, what is it? Like, what is that taste? I can't compare
it. What is it? Yeah.
You know, and for me, and Gary, I know you're the same, whenever we find a new ingredient or anything. So that's you. You want to be
If you want to be specific, like, I will absolutely go, like, freaking garlic bread, a gorgeous margarita, basil oil, and a tiramisu.
Beautiful.
Like, knock me out. Like, I'm happy days. But as I said, I remember that feeling of, like, and again, I suppose at the time, being on my culinary journey, guys, I was definitely trying to understand what's going on here, you know, and understanding like saffron and going, there's a bit of that, you know, or a celeriac puree going, okay, now I kind of understand what this is.
Like, I suppose, you know, we take for granted like all these weird and wonderful ingredients and different chefs and cuisines and whatnot. But I often think about people that maybe can't cook or have no real, not beyond the realms of a few home dinners or whatever, what must be going through their head when they're eating stuff that's so alien to them, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe, but yeah, but we even, all enjoy it in our own way.
Yeah, but even the prepping of that, even like, you know, I just am so interested.
Well, you can appreciate it with a DIY head on you.
Yeah, I think so. I think like it is, it's ingredients and an outcome. Like, I mean, ultimately that's kind of how I approach it, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, thanks a million for coming in, Dave.
Voice.
Sorry to, I'm sure you don't hang around this building this late most days, but.
He has a meal to construct.
Yeah.
Or a language to learn. One or the other.
Yeah, you're a good man.
I'd happily do it.
Good guy for coming on. Thanks very much, Dave.
Appreciate it, lads. Thanks.
Cool. So you can you can write the script with Dave. He rolls in here with a Man United tracksuit top, a Man United t-shirt,
what
shorts, and a pair of Bleeding Runners. I'll tell you this much.
Annette would throw me out of the house.
Well, as he said, now is the time you show you're a real fan. Yeah. But I think you struggled with being a real fan yesterday, because we had a right bit of crack over text.
Yeah, look, do you know, I love Man United with all my heart and soul. I mean, I genuinely just, people that don't have a favourite sports team, like, you know, Finn Harps as well, like, I just, you know, love them, you know what I mean? And it's the same with United. And, you know, I'm not a bandwagon fan. United for the first 10, 12 years of my life were the way they are now. Like, we were terrible, poor, right up until the 85 FA Cup, shocking side. But, you know, the one thing that you always clung on to with a team was whenever a bit of effort was being put in. It's the same, you know, if you have a chef at work or somebody that's maybe not getting it, or they're not doing whatever, but they're coming in, they're on time, they're always, their uniforms are ironed, they're cleanly shaven or manicured, they're making an effort, and it just goes so far to keeping that relationship strong, you know. But we're just a pathetic group of athletes at the minute, and
it's such a lovely setup.
They turn my stomach. Like, there is no excuse as a professional at any walk of life. You know, I really, really judge people if they show up to work and they don't care, whether it's, you know, chefs in the K Club, you know, guys coming in or youngsters and they're learning, they're cooking, but they're dressed right, they're on time, they want to learn, they want to make an effort. You will go to the ends of the earth for that. But someone that doesn't give a fiddler's, no. Not for me. And that's, sadly, that's Man United at the minute, but we're going to move on very quickly. Dave was, he was a good crack, wasn't he? Interesting story.
He really is.
Going to Russia.
He was, he's really an interesting cat, isn't he?
Yeah. Smart man.
Yeah, well, look, I read it in the notes that Ed put together for us, that he had a couple of languages, but Jesus, it's obviously a real forte here. Anyway, speaking of our Ed Chef, what have we got this week in the conundrums, Ed?
A lot of self-satisfaction.
Yeah, what a sport.
This week,
we'll be very swiftly on.
Second and hour.
Hey, chefs, I've always wanted to try making beef bourguignon.
Oh, beef bourguignon.
Bourguignon from scratch, but feel a little intimidated. Can you help Belinda Ducey in Wicklow?
It would be remiss of me.
Donna Mead man probably can't even pronounce that word.
Well, I'd have to let you take the bourguignon.
No,
go on. You're the one. No, apparently, no. You worked in France. Come on, give us an old beef.
I worked in France, man, but I wasn't dishing out. That's like going to, you know, a big squad of patties in New York and giving them what? Irish stew. What does Ireland eat? Like, what is a national dish? Boiled bacon and cabbage?
Or a stew is one, bacon and cabbage.
No, you take this one, yeah.
So, look, if you're making a bourguignon, you can use a secondary cut of meat, right? And you can, it's a braising dish. But I'm thinking, if you want to really have a...
On the fly.
Yeah, if you want one that's a little bit quicker, you could use the rib roast to make a bourguignon. And look, we've given you the recipe to sear it off and roast it. But to make a beef bourguignon, and in restaurants you see, even very high end restaurants, you often see the garnish for a beef bourguignon used like a sauce. So a bourguignon basically is beef, shallots, bacon, some mushrooms, and then a red wine sauce. That's kind of the nuts and bolts it. So you could dice up the rib roast, sear it off in a pan really well. Take it out, and then you deglaze that pan with some red wine, and then you're going to add in your roasted shallots, your crispy bacon, your little button mushrooms that you're going to fry off, and then you put that diced, seared off rib roast back into that mixture once the wine is reduced down, and then you're going to add in some beef stock and then a couple of knobs of butter to bring it all together, loads of chopped parsley right at the end, and you're left with this wonderful kind of rich red wine gravy with your diced rib, your shallots, your bacon, your mushrooms.
Bordelaise is the one where you feed back in the bone marrow, isn't it?
Yeah, so bordelaise would be similar to that, but right at the end you'd put in
instead of the butter, you'd dice up the
bone marrow, exactly, and you just fold it through. But you're basically end up with this wonderful rich red wine, shallotty, mushroomy, bacony sauce. Very, very delicious.
And beautiful recipe. With some buttery mash.
Buttery mash, or even if you wanted it, you could have it with some boiled potatoes. We had something that we'd always say as well. But no, delicious. Good question.
Great. Next up, Adrian in Mallow. Quick one for your collective cooking genius. I want to try cooking duck breast, but I'm nervous about rendering the fat properly. How do you get the skin super crispy without overcooking the meat? Ooh.
Two very important things to do. You got to get a lovely little trellised cut on the fat, okay? So you've got your duck breast laid out on your chopping board, and you're going to take the tip of a very, very sharp knife and just an even distant lines, slit the fat. Now, making sure that you're just using the tip of the knife, slitting the fat, don't go too far that you go into the flesh, all the way top to bottom on the breast, and then turn it around almost like in diamond configuration. Do it the opposite direction. Then the next thing, which is contrary to what you'll almost always hear Gareth and I talk about, you're going to start with a really cold pan, ideally a cast iron pan, and you're going to put the breast down on a medium heat, skin side down on a cold pan. And the reason for this is you're going to render the fat, and to render the fat is to drag the fat out, and all that sort of rubbery soft fat texture, by rendering it, the pan needs to be cold, because if it goes in and the pan is hot, it's going to create a sealed layer right away. That will then continue to burn and blacken, but there'll be like about a half a millimeter of soft tissue fat between the charred edge and the flesh. And when you're eating the duck breast, that won't get a chance to render. So it's going to give you that really icky, sort of soft, fatty texture. So it's imperative that you start with a cold pan. Take your time. Don't rush it. And check it every minute. Once you get 2 or 3 minutes and you can start to see you're not adding any oil, you're not adding anything. The only thing you're doing is you're rubbing, before you cook the duck, you're rubbing it with fine sea salt, rub it into the fat, and then cover the flesh with a decent layer of fine sea salt as well. Skin side down, cold pan. Until when you check it, you'll tap the knife and you'll get the noise that it's crispy all the way through. Once it's nice and golden and there's no soft fat tissue left, then you'll seal in the breast. Finish your cooking over a couple of minutes. And then the really, really key point here, and I don't care what chef has told you otherwise or you've seen it anywhere, when you slice the breast, you must slice it head to toe. Long, thin slices of duck. Don't cut it into 2 or 3 big thick chunks. Duck is too tough. Even the most tender of duck breast, slice it thin. And if you imagine head to toe, long, thin slices, and it'll eat like butter. Perfect.
Beautiful. Now, we're going up to Castlebaney for the next one. I'm very interested in this answer, I have to say. I'm looking for a way to jazz up my mashed potatoes for a special occasion. Any ideas for flavors or toppings that could make them a little bit more exciting? Cheers, and absolutely loving the pod. Deirdre Fallon and Cashel Blaney.
Well, I think the obvious, we'll give you the two most classic ways to do mash. One is Col Canon. So Col Canon mashed potato is basically mashed potatoes with cabbage.
Yeah.
So you just finely shred your cabbage, saute it down in a little bit of butter until it gets nice and soft, and then you just fold through a really creamy mashed potato. It's most of us may have memories growing up around Halloween, and we're getting close to that now, and your mother or father or whoever was doing the cooking would have put kale through. That's kind of a classic, but I actually prefer Savoy cabbage than kale. Kale works as well, but I wouldn't saute it in the butter. I'd blanch it off in some boiling salted water, and then I would fry it in the butter. But I think if you get a nice York or a Savoy cabbage, you don't have to blanch it. It's so good.
It's so good. Yeah.
And loads of chopped parsley at the end. And then the other one is a champ mashed potato, which is the same thing. Instead of using your cabbage, you're going to use spring onions, or scallions as they're called. Chopped really finely, loads of them. Now, I'm like 2 bunches to 500 grams of potato. Saute them down, the spring onions, very finely chopped, seasoned well. And then you add in your creamy mashed potato. So potatoes that you've mashed really well. We've spoke about how to make mashed potato loads of times, but loads of cream and butter. And really, when you think you've enough butter in there, throw in another knob.
And any milk?
No milk cream.
No milk cream. Never use milk in spuds. No.
It gets too wet. If you've now, I would say just stay away from milk and just use butter if you don't have any cream.
You don't have cream.
Because like the whole idea of that, like teaming the potatoes are getting rid of the steam. You're trying to get rid of any water so the potatoes will take more butter and more cream.
Great.
Delicious. Yeah.
Thanks to everyone for firing in the conundrums. Keep them coming.
And as a wee change, olive oil is nice as well.
I've heard
and
that.
Olive oil mash is beautiful. Whole grain mustard. If you want a mustard
creme
mash.
Creme fraiche works quite well.
Creme fraiche and a big spoonful of, depending on how much you're making, whole grain mustard. You want to be eating something like a collar of bacon or a smoked loin of bacon or something strong. But mustard mash is really, really cool. And olive oil mash is beautiful if you want to stay a bit healthier. Right. It's a really good olive oil. Makes a gorgeous
match. I am starving. Thanks to everyone again. Keep them coming in at food@goaloudnow.com.
Okay, so that's another week done and dusted, Gary. As always, we'd like to big shout out to our sponsors, Johnstone Beef. And I know they've there's a few of the boxes left there that was only on to the lads. They're very happy with the sale. So,
lovely. Thank you. JSBDO. Because Gareth would more than likely has forgotten it already.
So make sure.
All the boys at Johnstone Beef, if you're probably relying on Gareth to make sure that the boxes get sold, they'd be
forget about
sold.
It.
Forget about
it. So what he's giving you there is the checkout code. So when you do email or you ring the lads, make sure you give them that code for a further 10% discount. But look, thanks a million as always to Johnstone. We're look big fans of the product and we're delighted that we have you on board. We'll speak to you next week.
So drop a follow on the show, send it to a buddy at Gar Mullins, at Gazza Chef on, and if you're really desperate, at Ed Smith as well. If you want to get someone there.
The bitter word.
Tap up the boys on Instagram or whatever. I think we're coming near the end of season 4 and the word on the street is we're going to get signed again. I mean, not since Roy Keane has there been a contract.
It's all about football.
That's been renewed as much as us boys. But so there you go. All you other podcast hosts, we're sorry. But Darren is in ahead of us. He's signed the boys up by our media legends. We're back, season 5. But we'll wrap up this one first. We have a couple left. Don't go anywhere.
Dishing It Out with Gary O'Hanlon and Gareth Mullins, a Go Loud original podcast.
Proudly sponsored by Johnstone Fine Foods. Get premium Irish dry-aged beef delivered to your home at johnstonebeef.com.
Go Loud. Sounds better with us.